So how lovely to see you all on a Saturday morning. All the humans, all the cats. Hello, cat. Very good to see you all and all your lovely smiling faces. My name is Benny and I am a food addict. And I identify myself as a food addict because I behave in addictive ways with food. I use food the way people use drugs. I use food to insulate me from life, from the inevitable ups and downs of life. And so my problem really wasn't food, even though that's what I thought it was. My problem was an inability to cope with life. And miraculously today, I am no longer in the food. And that is truly an incredible thing. I can't fully explain it, but here I am. And I'm going to try to give you some of the ideas of what brought me here. So let me just start with a little bit of my history. So my earliest compulsive eating behavior started when I was a kid. My parents had does anybody remember those bread boxes that were metal? Yes, I see some nodding. And they would go when you move them, when I would try to sneak cookies out of that. Can you imagine? But that was the skill I developed to be able to do that. I began in my teens. I was never fat. I was chubby. And in my teens, I began to practice dieting. So I had periods of skinniness and periods of chubbiness. And I was very successful at dieting. One particularly torturous memory is something I've shared when I've spoken before, and it always strikes a chord with people. So I'm going to share it again. Sorry if you've heard me speak before. Is of babysitting. And it was only about a year or two ago that I remembered this horrible thing that I did when I was babysitting. I was really like, get the kids to bed and get me to the kitchen so I can eat. And it was a real search and destroy mission. And I don't know why people asked me to come back, but they did. And you know, I owe them an amends. So I was always looking for the ease and comfort that food brought, and it did bring that until it stopped. So this behavior continued through college, through early adulthood, through my marriage, that continues through middle adulthood, and now into my, in my 40s, I guess I got some recovery. I didn't realize that I was in the grips of an addiction. I didn't even realize what I was doing. I was kind of in denial about it. And I just had no idea, but I would continue the cycle of eating, gaining, losing, gaining, eating, you know, that was my cycle. And I just like to say when I share that I was never very heavy. I was maybe 15 pounds heavier than I am now at my max. I am a short person. I'm a little person. 15 pounds is a lot on me, but it's not a huge amount of weight. And I understand that. And one of the reasons I share that is I want people to understand that we come in all shapes and sizes. And I was a maniac around food. Just because I didn't carry it in a lot of weight doesn't mean I wasn't a nut job. Anyway. All right. 2001, like many people after 9/11 in this New York area, I got laid off. And I was talking to my dear friend about my weight problems, and she broke her anonymity and as my Ebby, and she told me about OA. So I went to OA, and I went to a few meetings, and it was really nice. I liked it. I related to some of what was read. I thought it was kind of fascinating. But either nobody talked to me about the steps, or I didn't pick it up. So I didn't understand what it was really about, but I did kind of like the idea of being in a group where people were doing the kinds of things I was doing with food. In one meeting, they started talking about God, and that sent me running for the hills because that was just way too much for me. So I eventually left OA, not that I was really committed to it, but I left and I went to graduate school. And in 2009, I had completed my schooling, I had gotten a job, and I was just finishing Weight Watchers for the umpteenth time. I mean, I really am a professional at the Pay and Way programs. And I knew that I was certain that I was going to gain again. I was in that really bleak place that Bill Wilson calls it the jumping off point. And I really honestly knew I'm one of those people that came in for the sanity, because I knew either I was resigned to continue living like this in this bleak, gray, food addicted world, or I had to find another solution. And I thought OA would not work. In fact, I was convinced OA would not work, but I'm the type of person who had to give it a try. So I went into OA with a pretty convinced attitude that I was special and it wouldn't work. And I just gave it a try. So after a couple of weeks in OA, I mean, I really was a sorry mess, but I was desperate. I did get a sponsor who was a real kick-ass sponsor and who really kicked my ass through the 12 steps. And as I worked the steps, I began to change. And that's what this program does for us. It gives us a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from food addiction. This is from the big book, page 567, except for the food addiction part. This change happens in my patterns of thinking and attitude. And by working the 12 steps vigorously, and all 12 of them, on a daily basis, I got to receive that change. And that was incredible, because that's what was driving me to eat. Those patterns, that way of thinking. I get to have an spiritual experience that helps me to stop eating compulsively and to live more contentedly, even in really rough times. So by the miracle of this program and the grace of a power greater than myself, I will have 9 years of abstinence this month. So thank you. And I don't know how that happened. I really don't. I mean, why I don't have my head in a bag of whatever is hard to explain, except that this program, these 12 steps, these 12 traditions work. Okay. So the key component about the 12 steps and 12 traditions is finding a higher power, a power greater than yourself. I choose to call that power God. And that has been a guiding force for me for what to do and how to do it. He's done for me what I cannot do for myself all these years, these 9 years. And he's done much more than I ever anticipated he would do. So you can choose not to call your higher power God. It doesn't really matter. You can choose to call your higher power whatever you choose. But that's what the word I'm going to use. So I hope no one runs from this room as I did from my first encounter with that word. So I offered to speak on this topic, not because I'm any expert on it. I'm not. This is a topic that is really challenging for me. And so I wanted to stretch and talk about something that would challenge me. So the topic is let go and let God. And the place that I'm starting is on is in the big. I'm referring a lot to the big book, it gives us guidelines on how to let go and let God. So in step three, we make a decision to turn our will, which is our thinking, and our lives, which is our actions, over to the care of God as we understand Him. So step three is basically a commitment to service for others. And self-abandonment, which is our thinking. Stop thinking all about yourself and move through the steps. So it's a commitment to do the steps 4 to 9, and then live in 10, 11, and 12. And we really get to fulfill that commitment in 12. So in page 62 in the big book, it talks about where do we start? How exactly do we do this? First of all, we had to quit playing God. Well, this for me means I have to stop wearing myself out trying to adjust life and everyone and everything to fit my expectations of what it should be, trying to force it and muscle my way through. That's what I had to stop doing. That's when I'm playing God. Recently, I've been hearing in the rooms this phrase that really reminds me, this is how I know when I am trying to play God. I am trying to fix, manage, and control. That is my best, that's my default scenario. That's what I'm going to do. So I do this when I'm worried about something, when I want to know, when I want it to go exactly how I want it to go. I want to guarantee the outcome. And I, when do I want to guarantee the outcome? When I'm afraid that what is not, that something's going to happen that I don't want to have happen, or something won't happen that I do want to have happen. So when I'm afraid, I am disconnected from my higher power. That's what keeps me from letting go and letting God, because I'm trying to control things, fix, manage, and control. So that brings me to fear. And lo and behold, I found through working the steps that I am an enormously fear-based person. I know none of you can relate to that, but I am unique in that. So let's talk about what the big book says, page 67 through 68. Fear. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding, which means destructive, thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. Sometimes we think fear ought to be classified with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Amen to that. That is the truth. It does cause me an enormous amount of trouble. So the question then becomes for me, how to let go of fear? Let me just see what time I'm at. Okay. To me, that starts with being able to recognize when I am in fear. And that takes time. I really don't always know that that's what's going on. I get some hints. So sometimes these are some aspects of fear that I have begun to understand as I've worked with my sponsor. I've begun to understand that this is what how fear shows up for me. It shows up as guilt. It shows up as worry. It shows up as my favorite, futurizing. This is what's going to be. This is what's going to happen. Catastrophizing and obsessing. Oh boy, I get to see a really big picture of myself now. Okay. Thank you. So I have to realize when I'm in that and kind of shortstop my initial reaction. So my initial reaction to being in any of those is to take action. So that means I'm going to react. I'm going to overreact to whatever's going on. There's somebody on the phone who's annoying me, who's not doing, or the customer service rep who's not doing what I asked them to do. I'm going to yell. I'm going to insist. I'm going to become strident. My husband isn't cooperating with me. I'm going to become argumentative. Something's not going how I want it to go. I'm going to become, I'm going to plan. I'm going to be, anyway, my own, you hear the little designs and machinations in there. And how do I learn to do this, to stop short that response? I use a lot of step 10s, step 11, which is prayer and meditation, talking to my sponsor. Those are my main tools. So I'm going to go through that. I'm going to screen share this. So what I'm doing is I'm going to screen share the different things that are in the big book. Do you want me to put this in the chat also so that you can copy it? I'm not seeing any nodding heads, so I won't. But if that does come up.
Please put that in the chat.
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Let's hope that this works. Okay, are you seeing my screen? Yes? Cool. Oh, but you know what? I can't put it in the chat. I will put it in the chat at the end. Okay, I can't do it as we talk. Chat's not available to me. Sorry, guys. Is that all right? Yeah, I hope so. Okay, so recently I discovered that what's hysterical is that this has been a pervasive fear of mine my entire life. And yet I was never able to put my finger on it. And something happened recently where I was, where I realized that I have a fear of not having enough time. That's a huge fear for me. I'm not going to get it done. I'm not going to finish. I'm not going to accomplish what I set out to do. And it's shocking to me that how pervasive and incredible this fear is. It came up recently. It comes up all the time, but it came up recently when a friend asked me to help her with something. And she asked me in a text, a very nice text, and I responded by calling her. No pause, notice, no pause. And I called her and I said, I don't have time, essentially. And she said, well, I really could use your help. And I said, well, okay, I can help you here. You know, it was just very frantic. So we hung up the phone and got back. And then when we eventually got back on the phone and I was prepared to help her, I had calmed down a bit, but she told me off anyway, which I deserved. And I did help her. So after that, here's the process. That night I did a step 11. And in the process of doing that step 11, I realized that things had not gone all that well and that I had something I needed to talk with somebody else. So I'm going to get to step 11 in a minute.
Vinny?
Yeah?
It's George. We have a request in the chat. If you could make that full screen so it's bigger or zoom in on the text.
Okay, I don't really know how to do that.
There's a magnifying glass.
Okay.
And maybe to 200% might do it.
Does that help?
That's great. Thank you.
You're still seeing my border, right?
Yep.
I'll unscreen share it for a moment and then I'll put it back up. Any other requests, just let me know, please. Thank you. Thank you for the host. Thank you to the host. The next day I had a conversation with my sponsor and she was able to show me the pattern. So that's why talking to my sponsor is such an incredible part of this process. I then spoke to my friend. I actually left a message for her apologizing. And then eventually I spoke to her and we both realized that we are both nincompoops when it comes to time. So let me go through the process now, the screen share. Okay. So fear inventory. So the step 10s, I do them whenever I'm bothered by anything. I mean, bothered, it doesn't have to go to the point of being resentful. I'm bothered. Something is bothering me. Something is disturbing me. Something is annoying me, pissing me off. That's when I do a step 10. So I was afraid of not having enough time. Why? I was afraid of helping my friend. Why? Because I was afraid of not having enough time. Do I realize I'm relying on finite self and not infinite God? No, I didn't at the time. What can I do so column 2 doesn't happen? Mm-hmm. What is my action plan? What is it that I'm afraid of? So what can I do so I have more time? Well, I can plan less things. But how about I could also trust a higher power that there will be enough time? And what character defects would keep me from trusting a higher power or planning less things? And that's compulsiveness, doingness, busyness, controlling because I want to get everything done. And then I ask, what would God have me be? What would be the ideal? And the ideal would be trusting, letting my higher power run the show. And so if I wasn't really resentful, but if I had been resentful, well, maybe I was a tiny bit resentful. Let's be truthful. So I was resentful at my friend because she asked me to do something for her when I obviously am so important and so busy. And this affects my, not myself. So these are all the different things that it can affect. My self-esteem, not so much. My pride, I don't think so, but my security for sure. My ambitions for sure. My personal relationships for sure. Not my sex relations and not my pocketbook. My part, she helps me all the time. Why am I being such a jerk? Why am I so unavailable? What is so important? I'm overestimating my importance. What character defects allowed me to do my part? Well, selfish, for sure. Dishonest, the lie I tell myself, I don't have enough time. Self-seeking, maybe a little bit. Fear, inconsiderate for sure. A controlling, busyness. And so what is the opposite? And pray for that. What would God have me be? So I'm always turning back to what would God have me be? So this is letting go, letting God. What would God have me be? God would have me be calm. God would have me generous. God would have me be trusting. I will put this all in the chat, you guys, so that you can copy and paste it if you wish. No requirement that you do that. Okay. Here are some prayers that I really like. The fear, everybody seeing this okay? Just nod, some people, please, thank you. Okay, so this is the step four fear prayer, which I totally love. God, please remove my fear of not having enough time and direct my attention to what you would have me be. I don't know, when I say that, I feel my shoulders go down. I feel the tension go out of me. Demonstrate through me what you can do. Please at once help me to commence to outgrow my fear of not having enough time. So this is in Big Book, page 68. And then this didn't really apply. I didn't really feel that she was asking anything unreasonable, but God, I realize that my friend is perhaps spiritually sick. Though I don't like her symptoms and the way they disturb me, her symptoms, her behavior, the way that disturbs me, she, like I, am sick too. Please help me to show her the same tolerance, pity, and patience I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. This is a sick person. How can I be helpful to her? Save me from being angry. Thy will be done. Again, turning me back to what is my higher power's will? All right, so step 11 is also something that's a newer part of my practice, and I have really found it useful. And my first sponsor used to say to me, it's like a little broom. You just use it to sweep off your day. It doesn't take you a whole lot of time. And what I do is I have an index card with these questions. I look at them. And then I ask myself the questions. So this is step 11 on page 86 in the Big Book, starts with the night. And I think that is, I've heard it said that that is because they're expecting that you did step 10s all day long. So at night, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. So constructively means like not with a sledgehammer, just constructively looking at your day gently, like as if you were talking to someone you cared about. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? So I did not realize at that time that I was afraid. Do we owe an apology? I thought maybe I did. Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Aha, that's where I said, oh, I should discuss what happened with my friend, with my sponsor. That's where I figured it out. Were we kind and loving toward all? Maybe not. What could we have done better? I could have reacted better. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? Yeah, I don't know if I did so great on that. But we must not be careful not to drift into worry. Remorse or morbid reflection. So it's not someplace to whip ourselves or to beat ourselves up, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. What corrective measures should be taken? Well, I knew first thing is first thing was that I had to talk to my sponsor because she would help me straighten out my thinking on this. And thankfully she did. Step 11 also says, in the morning, here's what we say. God, please direct my thinking, especially that it be divorced from self-pity, self-seeking, and dishonest motivations. Motives. So I do wake up in the morning and say that to myself. And you can reword it to make it friendlier for you. But here are some other things that step 11 says. Page 86, it says, God, please give me inspiration, an intuitive thought or decision about not having enough time. This is what to do when you're undecided. Help me to relax and take it easy. Help me not to struggle. When I first read the big book, that was my favorite line. Help me not to struggle, because I struggled all the time. It helped me to understand that this had a solution. Help me to know what to do and to remember that you are running the show. So here are some ways to say that in simpler ways. God, please show me the way. Help me to know the next right thing to do, God. Help me to calm down. That's often my go-to. Help me to calm down. God, please show what you would have me do. And continuing in step 11, there are further instructions, page 87 to 88 in the big book. God, please, when agitated or doubtful, God, please give me the right thought or action about, help me to remember that I am not running the show. Thy will be done. And this is a prayer for guidance that I picked up somewhere along the way that I really like. And I do say often in the morning, God, give me the strength, faith, and courage I need to take care of the problems in my life today. Help me to know the next right thing to do. Keep me free from self-will and fear, and help me to remember that you are running the show. All right, so that's the end of my screen share. And when we are when I stop speaking, I will put all that in the chat, I promise. Okay. So the next thing I just want to talk about is that my ego constantly resurrects itself. That's the problem. You know, it'd be nice if I could live in that place, but I can't. So my ego constantly resurrects itself. I constantly take my will back. And Bill W. addresses this in the AA 12 and 12, step 6, page 65 to 66. He says, the best we can do with all the honesty we can summon is to try to have it. And by it, he means be entirely ready to have God remove all our defects of character. Even then, the best of us will discover to our dismay that there is always a sticking point. Yes, such is the power of our instincts to overreach themselves, no matter how far we have progressed. Desires will always be found which oppose the grace of God. And that is definitely the truth for me. So what to do in that point? Well, what I do is that I admit I'm just another human being and return to my intention to quit playing God. And I use those tools, the 10th step, the 11th step, my sponsor, the 12th step, to bring me back to that point of surrender and humbleness. I often ask myself, what story am I telling myself? Because that's generally a lie. And it's my ego. My stories make me miserable and block me from my higher power. Uncover, discover, discard. Someone, I heard that in the room somewhere, and that's really the process for me. I've heard it said in the rooms, this is not an original, that learning to trust God is like cooperating with the lifeguard who is trying to save your life when you're drowning. If you continue to struggle, you're going to be grabbing at that lifeguard. So you're going to you're trying to control what's happening, and you're going to take you and that lifeguard down, or at the very worst, or the lifeguard's going to back off because they don't want to die. So, but if you surrender, which means going limp, giving up control, then the lifeguard, the expert, the professional, can save you. That's what trusting God is like, giving up. So just a couple more things.
You're at 30 minutes, Benny.
Hey, thanks. I do have a God box, which someone gave me. It is full of things I have asked God to help me with. I was hoping to burn them all in a fire this year, but that did not happen because of COVID. But it is an excellent tool. I found it useful because when I put something in the God box, it's a reminder that I have handed it over. I don't take it back. I don't get to mess it up by taking it back. Another physical tool that I have, I learned about this in the rooms as well. This is just a little vase, glass vase, with stones in it. Each time I give up my will or reach out to my higher power for a reminder to give up my will, I'll put one in here now for doing this talk. I put a stone in there. Eventually it's filled and I empty it out and start again. So those are two tools that I use. Okay. In the big book on page 420 in the story, Acceptance Was the Answer, is a paragraph that I want to read to you. Acceptance is the key to my relationship with God today. I never just sit and do nothing while waiting for him to tell me what to do. Rather, I do whatever is in front of me to get done. And I leave the results up to him. However, it turns out that's God's will for me. So my job is to pause and to figure out what the next right thing to do is to do it. Often that's do nothing. Often that's wait. And I don't really like that, but that's what it is often. Sometimes there's a limited amount of things I can do on the problem, but more often it's just go about your life. Do what you have to do, wash the dishes, do the chores, take care of the cats, whatever it is, that's what I have to do now. Because the outcome and the results are in God's hand. Leave it alone. They're in God's hands. If I'm invested in the results, I'm not letting God take it. If I've released control and released worry about the results, I've handed it off to God. Each time I take it back, by controlling, by worrying, I remind myself God has it. He's working on it. Don't screw it up by taking it back. Thank you.